If you have your Bibles, we'll be noticing Hebrews chapter 11. And tonight we're going to be looking at Jacob. Very powerful study. Hope, pray, and trust that the things that we discuss tonight will help us have a better understanding of who Jacob is. Maybe even identify with him some. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 20 and 21, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped leaning on the top of his staff. When we think about Joseph, Jacob, Jacob, along with Abraham and Isaac, were tent dwellers. Look at Hebrews 11 and verse 9. In Hebrews 11 and verse number 9, there the Bible teaches us, by faith he, talking about Abraham, by faith he dwelt in the land of promise, in a foreign country, dwelling in tents, notice with who? With Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. One thing that I found very interesting, being a tent dweller, movable, not in one locale, if you will, a pilgrim, one that was always moving about. And so it caused me to think about how Abraham was moving about, Isaac moving about, Jacob the same, moving about. And you think of the pilgrimage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was 100-something-odd years apiece on the earth. But they were always moving about, always moving about. And so it caused me to think about, you know, being a Christian. You know, really, we're moving about. We're on this earth here for a short period of time, and then we're gone. We're out of here, okay? So there's a few things that we know about Jacob. Number one, he was a real figure. He was a real person. And the reason why we know he was a real person, because Jesus referred to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob on two different occasions. In Matthew chapter 8 and verse number 11, he was referred to by the Lord. And also Mark chapter 12, verse 26. And in both of those situations, we come to find out that they are still alive. They're still alive. Which means that when we consider an individual dying, especially in the Lord, they're still alive even to this day. Look at Matthew chapter 8, verse number 11. In Matthew 8, verse number 11, the context is dealing with the centurion. And remember, the centurion had a servant and he was real sick. And Jesus says something very powerful in verse number 10 and verse number 11. When Jesus heard it, he marveled. Because remember, earlier he said, I have not found such great faith. No, not even in Israel. And so he said he marveled and said to those who followed, assuredly I say to you, I have not found such great faith, no, not even in Israel. And I say to you that many will come from east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. It's interesting that when you consider the phrase and sit down, it literally means to recline, to relax, to take ease. So that demonstrates to us that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know what they're doing right now? They're taking ease. They're relaxing. It's the idea of reclining. Okay? And so those who follow after the ideas, the thoughts, the way of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they're actually reclining right now if they have died faithful in the Lord. Look at Mark chapter 12. In Mark chapter 12 and verse 26. Mark chapter 12, verse number 26. This is in the context of the resurrection. And we made a comment about it just a few seconds ago. And the main point I want to make here is that Jesus is referring to Jacob. And remember, the Sadducees who did not believe in the resurrection, Jesus is correcting them. You do err, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. And the more I contemplated that and thought about that, it caused me to have great joy because, number one, the scriptures demonstrate that men and women will be raised from the dead, number one. Also, number two, the scriptures teach us that if anybody has the power to raise anyone from the dead, it's God himself. So there's two points there that's very powerful that he made to the Sadducees, which should give us encouragement. He said, you do not know the scriptures. Why? God said it. Know the power of God. He's able to raise them up. But notice verse 26. He says, but concerning the dead, that they rise, have you not read in the book of Moses, in the burning bush passage, how God spoke to him, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the what, friends? The living. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, according to Jesus, are real figures. Number two, Brother Dustin, they are alive right now. They're still alive. And that ought to give us great courage, great comfort, even today, being those who follow, those who are Abraham's seed, heirs according to the promise, that if we die in Christ, will we be alive spiritually? The answer is yes. And when I'm talking about alive, I'm talking about saved. Okay, because we also know that those who are outside of Christ, those who did not die faithful to God, even under the patriarchal and Mosaic system, they have died. They're still alive, but they are not saved. That's a different type of living there. All right, let's go to the book of Genesis. Let's take notice of some things. And I just want to... want us to consider a few things, because when we consider the very name of Jacob, two different terminologies, two different names or definitions we get. Number one, supplanter, but number two, a heel holder, H-E-E-L, holder. When when Jacob and Esau was born, what was Jacob holding on to when he was coming out of the womb? His brother's heel. And so he is known as the heel holder, okay? And so when we consider that, he was the younger brother in chapter 25, verses 19 through 26. Of course, we're not going to read all of this, but I want you to kind of have an idea where this story is taking place, okay? But he's the twin brother of Esau, according to verse 25. Twin brother of Esau. As a matter of fact, if you look at verse number 26, there you'll find what Jacob did, even coming out of the womb. Afterwards, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. All right, his name was called Jacob. And so there are so many things that we could talk about as relates to that situation. Go to Romans 9 and verse number 11 and following, how they were in the womb together, and how when you consider the fighting that was going on inside of Rebekah's womb, it was because two nations were in the womb arguing, fighting, metaphorically speaking. And remember, it was at that particular time that Rebekah was asking, what's going on with me? And God told him, you got two nations inside of you. Seemed like they were fighting then. Well, I venture to say it's probably because Jacob was starting it. Ain't no telling. The more that I read and study about Jacob, you know, he was a pretty rough character, even though he wasn't at the same time. So Jacob was the younger of the two, and he was going to be the one that his older brother was going to be serving. Now, I find that interesting in contrast, because when we consider when Jacob was about to die and he was going to be blessing Manasseh and Ephraim, who did he bless? Did he bless the older or the younger? He blessed the younger. Who was the younger, Manasseh or Ephraim? Ephraim. All right. So you see something different going on there. But what did Jacob do to Esau that caused Esau to be so upset with him the first time? What did he do? He cheated him out of his birthright. Okay, look at chapter 25. Look at verses 29 through verse number 34. Now Jacob cooked stew, and Esau came in from the field. He was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me with the same porridge or stew, red stew, for I am weary." Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright as of this day." That's interesting that he would say that. He knew better than that. But he was a schemer. He was a supplanter. He actually lived up to his name. Okay? Notice what he goes on to say. And Esau said, "Look, I am about to die. So what is this birthright to me?" That's not good either. Both of them have the wrong attitude. He should have taken a little bit more care of the birthright, but he didn't. Jacob should have had a little bit more respect for the birthright, but he didn't. Neither one of them really appreciated what was going on in their lives. Neither one of them. And that's possible even in our own lives. But notice what he says, verse 33. Then Jacob said, "Swear to me as of this day." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Jacob was a very dishonest man, very dishonest, didn't do things honest at all. I want us to take notice of some things. Genesis 25:33 was looking at that. I want us to look at Genesis 27. Because when we consider him, we understand that he knew that he was a wrongdoer, if I could say it that way. Genesis chapter 27, starting at verse number 5. You remember it was at this particular time that Isaac was ready to bless Jacob. All right? Isaac was ready to bless, really, Esau. And then we find Rebekah listening in. He told Esau to go out into the field, go get me some deer meat, some venison, fix it up, savory meat, come back, serve it to me. Who heard that? Rebekah heard that. What did Rebekah do? Say again? All right, so Rebekah told her son Jacob to go get some animals, bring it to me, I'm going to fix them up, and we're going to give it to Isaac. And Isaac was going to do what? He was going to eat of that meal, okay, eat of that meat. But then there was a discourse between Jacob and Rebekah. That discourse was that, well, Esau, he's a hairy guy. He's hairy. I'm smooth-skinned. He's going to know that something's not right here. And so already we have Rebekah, his mother. She's scheming. She's being deceitful. Then you have Jacob, and he's going right along with it. But he understands that this is not right. But he goes on with it. What do we learn from that already? What do we learn?
That the right way is to be forthright and honest, rather than trying to carry out machinations for our own gain.
Okay, good, great. What else? Say again. All right, doing wrong, you can influence others. What else?
Families taking sides.
Okay, you got families taking sides. Okay. Why is this situation so bad, though?
It's in the family.
All right, it's in the family. What else? Okay. Come on, y'all. Y'all missing the point. Why is this so bad? This is bad for a reason. All right. Her mother's influencing her son to do wrong. Do what wrong? What?
Lie.
All right. Lie. enabling sin. Okay. But there's one point. Look at it. Think about it. What is she asking her son to do or to be? Say again.
Pretend that he's his brother.
Pretend that you're your brother.
Hold on.
We got an identity crisis going on here. We're going to fake as if you're Esau. Hold on. People go to jail. Matter of fact, I did some study on that. In Texas, the penalty for false identification, for real, right now, up to a year in prison, $4,000 fine, court costs, community service, and license suspension. Matter of fact, you can even get insurance for identity theft. Chad, if somebody was to steal your identity and began racking up things on your credit card, and next thing you know, you got problems with credit, would that upset you? That would upset you. So here we had Rebecca, who was telling her son, let's trick your father. Let's trick him into thinking, having him think that you're Esau when you're really Jacob. In order for you to do that, you got to have an identity crisis yourself anyway. Let me make a little quick point. Go to Genesis 33. Genesis 32. I want you to notice something, just in case we don't get to it. In Genesis 32, you remember it was at this particular time, verses 22 through the end of the chapter. It was at this particular time we find Jacob. He's alone in verse number 24, and now he's wrestling with a man. You can put in your notes if you're taking notes, Hosea 12, 3 and 4. There the Bible gives us very clear distinctions that Jacob was actually wrestling with an angel. Okay, with an angel. Some get kind of confused on this because in verse number 30, Jacob says that I've seen God face to face. He was wrestling with an angel according to Hosea chapter 12, verse 3 and 4. Here's my point. In verse number 29, verse 27, the angel asks Jacob, he says, what is your name? He said, Jacob. He said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. You struggled with God and with men and prevailed. What's the difference between the first episode that we looked at and this one? What's the difference?
This one's
a
rightful changer.
Say again?
This one's a rightful changer.
Okay, so actually Jacob is now saying, I'm Jacob. He's not lying about his identity. There is a shift that took place. He's starting to really be honest. I said to myself, or I was probably talking to somebody else, I can't remember. I said, but it's interesting that he had to get away from his mama just to start doing right. I said I wasn't going to say that in class, too. I did say it. I was talking to you.
It was actually going to comment that reads us a bit of a dilemma as one of the Ten Commandments. Says honor my mother and thy father.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as you pointed out, there's a case in the Bible where in order to live in accordance with God's will, we had to get away from his mother's influence.
That's right. That's right. And so in this case here, he's finally coming to terms with who he is. He's being honest with himself. He's wrestling with this angel. The angel asks, what is your name? I'm Jacob. Now you're telling the truth. Now I can bless you. Yes, sir. And then Evelyn.
So in back in chapter 27, verse 11, when Jacob's arguing with Rebecca that he'll see through this.
Yes.
Verse 13, she says, let your curse be on me, my son, only obey my voice. and go get them for me.
Mm-hmm.
He has a conscience.
Yes.
It's bugging him. He don't want to do it. And she says, no, you're not going to get in trouble. It'll be me.
That's right.
So he's an honest. I'm making the assumption that he has an honest heart, but he's conflicted because he has a mother that he cares about who has cared for him for so long that is erring, making him err. And that happens in the world everywhere. It's hard to think for yourself sometimes when your parents are wrong, but and you respect them, you know.
Well, another thing that caused me to think of him being dishonest is what he did to his brother before that. And so even though he was struggling with this and he was contending with his mother, he gave in to it. He didn't have to, but he did. And a good lesson for us is, even if our parents are asking us to do something that we shouldn't be doing, we need to do what God says. His identity was wrapped up into what his mom did. And really, from this point forward, until you get to the point where he's wrestling with the angel, he's struggling. He struggles with Laban. He struggles with his wife, his concubines, or the handmaidens. He's struggling all through this time. He's struggling. And that's what happens when you start involving yourself in sin. You start struggling. Yes, ma'am.
So I have a question. What is actually the difference between the birthright that Esau sold him and the blessing that he basically deceived Isaac in giving him?
The birthright, of course, being the firstborn, he had every right to being an heir of everything that was going to be passed down. But since he gave that up, according to Hebrews chapter 12 or 13, I believe it is, being profane. Now you have, let's go to chapter 47, I believe it is, of Genesis. Chapter 48, where, now, Jacob was about to bless Joseph. Chapter 48, verse 3. For time's sake, drop down to verse number 14 through 16. Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hand knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn, and blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my father Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who redeemed me, they're going back to the Genesis 32 account, bless the lads, let my name be named upon them, and the name of my father Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And so here, Jacob was actually blessing Joseph in order to bless Manasseh and Ephraim. That was the blessing right there. Okay, so, and I learned that in this particular study because you have Abraham blessing Isaac, Isaac blessing Jacob, and Jacob blessing Ephraim and Manasseh. And I find it very interesting that look at verses. Where are we? Look at chapter 48, starting in verse 4. And look at 4 and 5. That's a good question, Evelyn. And I found this very, very interesting. Start at verse 3. Then Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz, which later would be called Bethel, in the land of Canaan, and blessed me and said to me, behold, I make you fruitful and multiply you. This was going to be the blessing, because the blessing was going to be, again, the seed promise, okay? So not the birthright, but the seed promise, the blessing. Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply, and I will make you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants. It was going to be going back to Canaan after you as an everlasting possession. Now watch this. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, who are they? Jacob said, they're mine. Now, that's interesting. I really had to stop and think about that. Jacob, he's saying that Ephraim and Manasseh, like Reuben and Simeon, he said, they're mine. He said, but the rest of them are yours. Now, keep in mind, he's saying this according to Hebrews 11, verse 20 and 21, by faith. So in essence, the blessing was God telling Jacob, by faith, Ephraim and Manasseh belong to you, not Joseph. That's interesting. Now, that's the blessing right there. So the difference between the birthright and the blessing is that point right there. I wish I would have talked to you earlier about that, because I wouldn't have questioned it like that. So that's a good question. You was thinking that too? That was your question. Then answer the question. Anyone want to add to that? Yes. Go ahead.
I always understood that the birthright was much more like possessions and everything, and the blessing was much more like what Abraham was passing on to everybody, where it was like the nation and all of that. But
well, of course you have the land and the possessions and things of that nature, but keep in mind the blessing always goes back to Genesis 12, mm-hmm. the first three verses. And so it would be through your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. So that would be the blessing. Evelyn, Chad, did you have your hand up?
No, I was agreeing that the birthright was more of the possessions, like, mm-hmm. like a, sometimes my parents, my brother and I would get the house.
Yes.
You know? But God put his blessing, the seed blessing, through Abraham. And that way you can trace the genealogy
yes.
back to Jesus. And that's where the blessings keep coming in.
Yes.
Where the birthright, I mean, Esau could have kept his birthright, and Jacob still could have been blessed.
That's right.
But it wouldn't have been, you know, that just meant Esau got to keep all the goods.
Which wasn't nothing really. Yes, ma'am.
No, I was just going to say that when it was two different things, the distinction between the two different things, Esau has said, first he took my birthright, and mm-hmm. now he's taking my blessing. And I wonder if he had given him the birthright, couldn't he have just been his father and said, hey, mm-hmm. Esau's already given me the birthright, you might as well just go ahead and bless me since I got the birthright. But he didn't do that because mm-hmm. there was a distinction between the two.
No, that's good. That's good. Any other comments? Yes.
Definitely have two from earlier, but to go off of that, it was subterfuge anyway. So Isaac didn't, I don't imagine Isaac would have been aware that he had, because it was between Jacob and Esau, I don't know how much Isaac would have known about Jacob tricking his brother into giving up his birthright. I mean, also, they try to do something to deceive Isaac. But I don't know how much of a fan Isaac would have been about him handing over his birthright to Jacob in the first place. Because if it was considered the same or close to each other, different, but still close to one another, like the blessing was on the back of the birthright, then he wouldn't have maybe gone to Isaac, maybe, but there's deception involved in getting the birthright. There's deception involved in getting the blessing. So I don't imagine Isaac would have been a fan, especially if Esau was his favorite child. So, but.
Well, one thing that Esau was just totally upset about is that first he takes the bless the birthright. Now he takes my blessing from me. So he's totally upset. And then this is where his mother Rebecca sends him off to her brother Laban. Okay, and so, I mean, it gets all mixed up real quick, and this is why deception is real bad, very bad. And it made Esau upset, and rightfully so. He should have been upset, but he was upset because, number one, now I don't have a birthright, nor do I have the blessing. I'm out both ways. And then you have Jacob, who is the supplanter, and I find it very interesting. Go to chapter... Look at chapter 33. In chapter 33, Jacob now, he is confronted by his brother. He sees his brother coming in verse number 4. He goes, he runs to meet him. And I find it very interesting how he strategically puts the children and the handmaidens, and then he leaves. Who's last? Who? You know, so he really loved them and put them last. But he meets up with his brother Esau, and things change now. Does it change for the better or for the worse? For the better. So we actually see some maturity in Esau, but we also see some maturity in Jacob. There's a changing. And one thing that I learned as well, that in the midst of all of the deception with Jacob, he comes across someone who is just as deceiving as he is, Laban. And he learns a lot of lessons with Laban. Lots of lessons. And so, look at verse 10. Verse 8. Now, notice this. I find this very interesting. There's a change in Esau's mind. And we see something in Jacob, too. A lot of maturity has taken place over the years. Then Esau said, "What do you mean by all of this company which I met?" And he said, "These are to find favor in your sight, in the sight of my Lord." So he's giving them gifts. But Esau said, what did he say to his brother? "I have enough." And so I stopped and I thought about that. I'm like, do we have enough? I don't think that some of us have enough because we're still looking. He said, "I have enough." And notice the response. Jacob, verse 10, says, "No, please, if I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my presents from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I have seen the face of God. And you were pleased with me. Please take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because what? I have enough." There's a lot of maturity going on here. They're just growing up right in front of us. Those are points I think, well, let me just say, probably about 15 years ago, I probably wouldn't have made that connection. But I can actually say right now in my life, I got enough. I got enough. But that's hard. It's hard to get to that point. And both of these individuals have grown to a point saying, "I don't need it." But he ended up taking it anyway because his brother Jacob said, "I want you to have it." All right? Yes, sir.
Looking back and how you talk about how the deception brought about the suffering that Jacob went through, mm-hmm. with Laban and Rachel and Leah and everything else that he had gone through,
mm-hmm.
And how it ultimately led to him wrestling with the angel and him being named Israel.
Okay.
At least when I look at James 1 verses 2 through 4,
mm-hmm.
I'll say it this way: I believe that had it not been for God turning that deception into using that as a way to mold Jacob into what he needed to be as Israel,
okay.
that when it came time for that, that Jacob would not have been ready for that. Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Everything that Jacob went through grew him up. And so you think about even our own lives and the experiences that we have. Well, they grow us up if we allow them. But some people never grow up. But really, you think of the world and how it's designed to grow us up. It's designed to mature us. The Word of God is designed to mature us. Acts 20 and verse number 32. And so, exactly. Also, when you think of the Exodus 32 passage, verse 28, when he's wrestling with the angel, if you notice what he says in verse number 30, verse number 20, where am I? 26. In verse number 26, he's wrestling with him and he says, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he says, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Well, he didn't let Esau go when he was coming out of the womb. He said, "I'm not going to let you go." Now think about this. He said, "I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me." Well, what was the blessing that he wanted? Well, he gave it to him. He said, "Now you're Israel. You're no longer supplanter. You're no longer the heel holder." He was holding on to the angel, and then the angel blesses him, changes his name to Israel, which in Psalm 78, verse 71, which literally means prince with God. But look at Genesis 35. We've got about 5 minutes. In Genesis 35, all of this is by the hand of God. Verses 9 through verse number 15. We're not going to read all of that, but just a couple of, first couple of verses there. "Then God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Paddan Aram and blessed him." Let me say this. I find it very interesting that the blessings were coming Jacob's way when Jacob was doing what is right, when his mind was right. And so God blessed him again, and God said to him, "Your name is Jacob. Your name shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name." So he called his name Israel. Also, God said to him, "I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall proceed from you." There's the blessing again. There's the blessing. And so Jacob not only learns lessons, his name is changed. No longer is he supplanter. Now he's prince with God. It's interesting, and I found it very exciting that when people came to God, obeyed the gospel, like from Saul to Paul, the name changed. So that's something that we have to keep in mind as well, that ought to be encouraging to us. Go to Genesis 48.
Can I just real quick?
Yes.
The point about Jacob was the prophecy or the information given to the mother about the younger serving the older.
Mm-hmm.
She may have felt that she needed to help bring that about, is the reason why she encouraged him to seek the father, which we know that she didn't have to, which is another lesson, not just for her, but also for Jacob, that if God says this is going to be the case, then he already has a way in which he was going to bring it about.
That's right.
If God said that the younger is going to serve the older, God was already going to make that happen in some way or fashion.
That's right. In Genesis 48, you remember when Israel, verse 14, stretched out his hand on Ephraim's head. He's the younger. He's blessing him instead of Manasseh, who is the older. And it was Joseph who said he moved his hand, his right hand, and he switched them. And remember what Jacob said? Look at verse number 19. And this is where Hebrews 11, 21 comes in. Okay. "But his father refused and said," and I could just hear Jacob saying this. He's older. He's leaning on his staff. He's on the side of his bed. He said, "I know, my son. I know." And so as bad as Joseph wanted Manasseh, the firstborn, to have his father put his right hand upon him and bless him, by faith, he wasn't that one. Ephraim was. Also, I want to make this point. This will be my last little point. Go up to chapter, stay in chapter 48, but look at verse number 9. When you look at verses 1 through 8, you find Jacob, he's just talking to Joseph. The sons have not walked in as of this particular time. Now the sons are in here, in there with them. And Joseph said to his father, he said, "They are my sons," because he's asking, "Who are these?" "They are my son whom God has given me in this place." It's a very powerful point there, that when we have children, they're from God. And he said, "Please bring them to me and I will bless them." Now think about that. Here you have Joseph, and he spent the last 17 years with his father in Egypt, because that's how long he was there. But before that, you know, he didn't have his father in his life. And you know the story behind that. And so now Joseph is looking at his father Jacob bless his sons. And notice what he does. He said, "Please bring them to me and I will bless them." Now, the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. Then Joseph, notice this, brought them near him. And what did Jacob do to the sons of Joseph? He kissed them. He embraced them. Brethren, if that's not personal, I don't know what is. This man is on his deathbed, but he's going to bless his son's children before he leaves here. What should that teach us? We ought to bless our children before we leave here. I learned so much from Jacob. But notice what Jacob says. And Israel said to Joseph, "I had not thought," verse number 11, "to see your face." Remember, he didn't ever think he was going to see his son again. He was dead. "But not only did I see your face, but who else did I get to see? I got to see your offspring. I got to see my grandchildren." Friends, there's a lot to be had looking at these passages, and God is teaching us we ought to take advantage of our family time. I've said this before, and maybe some people might not appreciate it, but I've really grown to appreciate COVID-19 in many, many ways. Number one, it slowed me down and probably slowed us down, but we get to enjoy one another more. Let's slow down and let's enjoy one another.